So when I changed the speech or the language that I was using, it gained a lot of interest. So I was able to ramp up pretty quickly to a lot of clients in my backyard. My EA, actually, Becky, sort of helped drag me through the accountability of what's due when, and the cover art and the names of the illustrations and all that kind of stuff. So it was very helpful to have like backstage folks, guiding me along and pulling me through that. And so some of the basic EOS tools, I think, really helped me, like running EOS on me, especially from a time management standpoint, to know like what is my highest and best use, and like really doing some thinking about that. What do I love to do and what am I great at versus what am I able to do, but I don't like it. I think one of the keys, for me, it has to be something I'm passionate about, and then the ideas will start to flow. But if I'm trying to push too hard, it's probably not the right time to crank it out.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of The Show Goes On. This is a podcast about the people who are helping entrepreneurs behind the scenes. My name is Amir Nirani, and today I'm joined by Alex Freitag. Alex is an expert EOS implementer. He was actually introduced to me by a good friend, Jill Young, and I'm so glad to have you on the podcast today, Alex. How are you?
Thanks, Amir. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, of course. And we had a couple minutes to catch up before this, and I just want to get straight into it. You're from Columbus, Ohio, but you've traveled around in a couple of other cities before then. So just get back to your story. Like, how did this all come about?
Yes. So long, windy road, probably like a lot of us entrepreneurs. What is Steve Jobs says, you can only kind of see the connection when you look backwards. So a lot of this just could not have predicted. But, there's a couple of key elements in the past that kind of connect into my EOS work today. I was a psychology major in college. And so that's just, thinking about human behavior and, team dynamics, and that it really fits in very nicely. When I graduated from college, I had no idea, what I was going to do. And it floated around a bit. I ended up in Los Angeles. I had done some acting in high school. And so I had a friend out there, and he's like, come on out here and, check out, be an actor. And I was like, that sounds great. So went out there and really, I went to Groundling Theater, which is like an improv. It's like Second City in Chicago.
Yeah.
And took classes there and just loved it and had so much fun. And while I was kind of trying to get an agent and kind of do that whole entertainment industry thing. And after a little less than a year, I was like, this is not something I'm going to keep, painting houses and working in restaurants. So I came back to Columbus and got a job and started on this. And the entrepreneurial kind of journey started in 96. And I had started a company called ProfitWorks, which I still have today, with my brother. And over the years, it kind of morphed and took different turns and twists. But I stumbled upon the book Traction. One of my clients handed it to me, and it was probably 2011. And I didn't read it. I set it on my book stand. And then in 12, I was poking around on Amazon and picked up Get a Grip, which is like the Fable version of Traction.
Yeah.
If you haven't read Get a Grip, if you're a visionary and kind of like the stories, like Patrick Lencioni stuff, it was a great read. And I just ate that up and decided to go to boot camp and become an implementer in 2013. And then, so I've been doing that ever since. And kind of, so I have these two sort of parallel tracks with ProfitWorks and EOS, and just absolutely love what I'm doing. Love that I get to work with all these entrepreneurs. And I can kind of look backwards and say, like, I kind of do improv with our clients and you do the psychology with our clients. And so it's a nice sort of culmination of experiences, what I'm doing now.
Okay. I would love to learn more about improv. So how has that played a role in your career now? And also, are you an SNL fan? I'm just curious.
Yes, I am. it's usually bite-sized pieces of SNL, but the general rule, which most people are aware of, is yes. And, that whole kind of, when your partner on stage says something like, Amir, that's a great balloon you've got there, you say, thank you. I got it at the zoo. Or, you just kind of keep rolling forward and it keeps the scene going. And you try to find a theme or a lesson or a message. And then as, like comedians kind of like making it up on the spot, you're trying to put a tidy little bow on the end of that scene. And in here with the clients, they're bringing, at least 50% of the of the content. So I don't know where we're going to go, but in the EOS, we have a structure to the day. You know, it's typically we're going to check in and look backwards a little bit and then start to plan and look forward and so forth. And so, but within that, I mean, a team in here on a Monday could be a completely different conversation, will be, than a team in here on Tuesday. So we have to be on our toes and be listening and watching the nonverbals. And so the improv sort of antenna are up in here, and it makes it fun. And we're also laughing and enjoying the day as well as being productive. So I see a tie in there in a big way. And then public speaking, you know, when you're doing talks for an audience, like an EO group or a Vistage group, just having that sort of fluidity or the buoyancy to kind of take what the audience might bring me and work with it and turn it around. So I see that as having been a very good sort of foundation for what I'm doing. So,
yeah, no, it's super cool. I feel like entrepreneurs, coaches, actors, musicians, entertainers of some form, like, you know, like let's say you have a session, like that's your day to perform. So it's almost like you're getting to tap back into being an actor all over again.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. And there was a phrase, I don't know who said this, but it was Frank Sinatra doesn't move pianos. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that one. No.
So you have this EA firm, right? And the idea there is that like talent comes in, does the deal on stage, and then goes, gets in the limo and leaves. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my highest and best use as an implementer is to help that team get aligned on the vision and, you know, discipline, accountability coach kind of thing, team health. And so from the standpoint of what's going on backstage, that's supporting me is really important. So other, you know, if you think about the performance metaphor of, you know, Becky, my assistant, has been just like invaluable for me. And so EAs are super powerful for that entrepreneur to really let go of the stuff they really shouldn't be doing. It's not their highest and best use. And I'm sure we'll get more into that. But it does touch on that sort of front stage performance versus what's going on backstage.
Yeah, for sure. And you also mentioned that you work with your brother.
I did. Yes. We worked together for about 6 years and really we tried to build ProfitWorks in the late 90s. So we were in the business of like teaching employees sort of basic business and finance, mm-hmm. sort of get them like owners. And it was a tough sell. It's really tough. So and if we think about an entrepreneur, you've built this business, you've got your P&L and your balance sheet and your cash flow, and you're trying to make this thing work. And the idea of sharing some of this financial information with the employees is a little frightening. And because it's like your baby, and you know, there are all kinds of like stories we make up as to why we don't share. It's like, they're going to want more money. Right. And these kinds of things. And so my brother and I found this niche sort of in the ESOP world, employee stock ownership plans, and also larger companies that had, they were publicly traded and so forth in Columbus and around Midwest. And so it became a nice ground for us to test all that. But it wasn't meeting our goal. I was married and he was getting married. We were like, we got to start, you know, doing something a little different. So we kind of mothballed it for a few years, and then I resurrected it solo a few years later. So, but it was fun, really fun to work with my brother, and we have lunch once a week and good friends. So it's the family business dynamic is interesting though, you know, versus just traditional kind of leadership team.
Yeah, no, I'm curious about it because my brother and I also work together, and we've been working together now for like over a decade, and it's
wow.
Been fun. I think we, you know, they always say whenever you start off any sort of partnership, even if it's not with family, understand what the other person is good at, and
yes.
I think my brother and I kind of just like figured it out organically and kind of winged it, and like luckily it worked out. You know, it's been okay.
That's good. I would say that we had this a similar agreement, and we, our father, who was our advisor for a number of years, suggested you don't do 50-50. So one of you's got to be 51 to make the final call. And so Gavin, my brother, was 51, which is totally cool. But we found our roles, and I became sort of the outside guy, and you know, got in, you know, sales and marketing and you know, demand creation and so forth on the front stage. And Gavin was my operations and like getting the work done. And we had some instructors and, you know, doing these ProfitWorks workshops. And it really was a nice balance. And we were learning, we're young, we're growing, and a lot of sort of false starts and stumbling blocks, but it was fun to work together. And there's that sort of innate trust with your brother that allows you to have maybe a little bit more freedom to to try some things. But so it's been a good, what was your, how did you guys figure out the roles?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I think I'm better at like kind of the sales side. However, he's very
Okay.
good at vision and I can also do some admin and he's good at marketing. So it was kind of all mixed and jumbled for us. And then
Yes.
we read Traction. And as we were reading it, we were like, oh, okay, he's the visionary,
Yeah.
not the integrator. And it all made a lot more sense to us then. And we
That
kind of
makes a lot of
fit
sense.
into those roles a bit more. And even now it's evolved. Like we've added some people to our leadership team and
Yes.
we would say, oh, you know what? She's probably a better integrator than even I am. And I feel like this kind of happens in the evolution of a company, but it was
Absolutely.
tough to figure it out. And I really think Traction helped us define it a little bit better, especially during those critical years when a company's starting to scale and you almost need to have like a show of unity for your team so that, they can take your
Yeah.
orders and follow.
I love that. And I, what you said sort of aligns with, you had role clarity. We didn't have EOS back, then. I wish we had. But we're running ProfitWorks on EOS now, which is night and day, in terms of the types of conversations, the issues that we're posing and solving and having rocks and all the, the different disciplines have been really helpful for us to hold each other accountable, our team. And we didn't have that back. It was kind of Wild West winging it and, the spinning plates kind of thing, which is an entrepreneur's journey, I guess, in the early stages, that when you're trying to scale it up. And so we did the best we could, but I'm no, if we could do it all over again, we'd do things quite a bit differently with EOS.
I feel like it's always a question we always say, like, oh, if only I knew that like 10 years ago, that would have really helped.
Right. Yeah, that's true. No, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So you read Get a Grip and then that led you back to Traction. Tell me more about that EOS Genesis, the story about how you got fully immersed within that world.
Yes. So it was 2013, and Get a Grip. I have my dog-eared copy. It's highlighted, and I had a glossary in the back because there's all this EOS terminology that's like, this is like interesting. So I was like, what's a level 10 meeting? What's a to-do? So I had all these little glossary terms in the back just so I could go back to it easily. And I was like, this is just really, it's simple, but I mean, it's not easy, but it's simple. And it made sense to my little crazy ADHD brain. And I wanted to teach it. I just wanted to teach it to entrepreneurs. And so going to boot camp was, I was probably number 55 in the community is what we estimate. Today, there are about almost 900 implementers. So I was very early in the journey. And I just loved it. And so, we do get on that 90-day world, that quarterly pulse where we're, setting up issues and knocking them down and just started the biz dev side of that, which is, you got to have a decent network in your geography. And I did. I'd been knocking on doors for years with the ProfitWorks. So when I changed the speech or the language that I was using, it gained a lot of interest. So I was able to ramp up pretty quickly to a lot of clients in my backyard, which was fun and a lot of good reputation. And I was the first implementer in Columbus, and now I think they're about 13.
Wow.
And so I've been able to, if my calendar's full, I can help the other implementers get up and going more quickly and just try to be a mentor and a resource for them. Along the way, I was a community leader at EOS Worldwide, which basically means I was teaching boot camp. So there were three or four boot camps going on each quarter, and I had the Tampa one. So I'd fly down there, and there would be 16 like sort of hungry implementers who were just getting started and wanted to learn this. So it was like a lot of fun to teach that, teach the roots of EOS to this group of entrepreneurs who had either experienced it, maybe they were on our leadership team and they wanted to become an implementer, or they sold and had some event and decided they want to be an implementer and a coach. And so it was a lot of fun. Did that for about 3.5 years. And Amir, when you teach something, you learn.
Yep.
And so the boot camp I was teaching was a kind of night and day from what Gino taught me in 2013, because it just evolved. We had like these manuals and videos and a lot of depth to how we teach sort of adults to learn this stuff. And then they would leave boot camp and just start knocking on doors. And so it became a nice way to get to meet a lot of the community as we were growing. And in 2020, I wrote a book called ProfitWorks. And that sort of reestablished my interest in that original business that that I did with my brother. And then that's a bit about incentive plan design for the employees in a business that's running on EOS or any operating system for that matter. And also teaching the employees, okay, you've got this incentive plan. How do you drive incremental profit that'll help fund it? And so you're getting to think like owners. And so I have kind of these two, you know, these two paths going. It keeps it interesting and variety for me right now, which is nice.
Yeah. So tell me about that. I wanted to ask about you've written a couple of books, right?
I have, yes.
You mentioned it was about incentive plans. Do you actually design those for clients, or how does it all work?
We do, yes. So it's in 2014, I wrote a book called Vision Works, and it was just sort of a brain dump of kind of my experience to that point. And then I kind of formalized it into the second book, Profit Works, two words. And it, to your point, it's incentive plan design is one piece, which I think a lot of entrepreneurs are frustrated by because there's not like a silver bullet on this. It's a lot of it's psychology, again, you know, trying to shape that human behavior toward improving the financial performance of the company. And so that sort of implies that the audience, the employees, need to understand how does the financial performance work. In our experience, and my brother Gavin and I, you know, were serving employees early in the 90s and early 2000s when we were doing this, we'd say, hey, what percent of sales would you guess is profit? And the, you know, the employees would raise hands and or they'd write it on their survey. And average guess is around 50%. So that, you know, they usually They've not been taught it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I have an old questionnaire.
Yeah, I mean, that, business has 50% profit of sales.
Oh my God! Exactly. Yeah, and they so if we can kind of start to help them understand, you know, there's sales, and that's sort of as you tie into EOS a little bit. What I've seen on like VTOs, which is the Vision Traction Organizer, some teams are we're not going to share financial information, but we will put sales on there. And let's say the 10-year target's 100 million and the 3-year picture is, you know, 40 million and the 1-year plan's 20 million or whatever it is. If the employees just see 20 and 40 and 100 and 20 and 40, they think you've got that money sitting somewhere. And so that story sends this message that like we're rolling in the money and you're not kind of, so there's us versus them. There's, you know, people resent, you know, the owners have taken all this risk and so forth. And so my passionate plea is to share the information that'll help your employees make better decisions at the moment. And oftentimes it's around gross margin, or it could be even further down on the income statement, or maybe it's related to cash, whatever it is. But when the employees start to understand it's like 10% is a decent profit at the bottom line, they start to behave differently, especially if their incentive is tied into, you know, increasing it. And so the book Profit Works, once I put it out there, a lot of the implementers were giving it to their clients because it would come up in a session like, how do we do comp? And, you know, and so there's ideas in there on how often should you pay it out? What's a good formula for it? And but we do that work for clients at Profit Works. But some people read the book and just do it on their own, which is great. I think the key, Amir, the key, I guess, plea that I have is if you're going to have an incentive plan, teach everybody how it works and keep it really simple. Most incentive plans are too complex and there's like tons of spreadsheets and stuff. And then people start to mistrust it and they think, how am I getting screwed on this? So if you keep it simple and then teach the employees how to fund it, it becomes self-funded. And then the employees don't look at it as an entitlement. It's earned compensation. It's like ownership thinking, right? Not like, hey, I got it last year. Where is it this year? It's like, no, you guys got it. But find money to fund the plan, you know, improved efficiencies and less rework and, you know, wasted trips or whatever, all those kinds of things that come up in the workshops. So, but it led to, this is kind of a full circle. I mentioned Get a Grip, but I wrote a fable last year and it's called Stretch Not Snap. That was the third book. And it's basically a sequel to Get a Grip. So the company's running on EOS, but they're frustrated because the employees think Vic and Eileen are taking all the money. So they end up implementing ProfitWorks. So it's sort of a picture. If you're running on scaling up or you're running on EOS, it would be a good book to read to learn a little bit more about ProfitWorks and how to share financials with your employees, that kind of thing. So,
okay. And that's called Stretch, Not Snap?
Stretch, Not Snap, which you could picture a rubber band, right? It's like, yeah, tension is good up to a point, right? So there's a curve called the Yerkes-Dodson, you've heard of, but no tension, you know, you get pretty low performance and too much tension, you get, you know, fear or burnout, that kind of thing. So stretch, not snap. Yeah.
Yeah, too much tension and then the rubber band snaps then.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And the idea came from my publisher. We were watching a video of Stephen Kotler, who's an author. You may know, he's done a lot of work in flow and flow research and flow collective. I can't remember the name of his company, but there's an interview where he was saying, like, so he's talking about surfers, and you want to have enough pressure on your performance to stretch, but not snap. And we're like, oh, that's it. That's the title. So worked out.
How was that experience of writing a book? Because now you've done like three different books. So how does that whole process start? Like, walk me through that.
Yes. The first one was like pulling my own teeth. It was very difficult. I had a lot of ideas up here, but I wasn't familiar with how to organize and all that. And the second one was a little better, a little bit more organized in terms of getting a broad outline and then starting to put kind of, you know, meat on the in content into it, and then trying to get client stories to fill in, you know, some of the color there. And then the fable, the stretch, not snap, was I went to like an Airbnb in the woods, and like I just dictated the thing because I'd been doing this work for so long, it just kind of rolls off. And so, you know, it just picks it up, and then I gave it to an editor, and she, you know, made it all grammatically correct. And then we kept, you know, reworking it until it was simple and succinct. But I mean, some people can do that very quickly. Mine are like 8 to 10 months kind of process. It becomes a set of rocks. And my EA, actually, Becky, sort of helped drag me through the, you know, the accountability of what's due when, and, you know, the cover art and the names of the illustrations and all that kind of stuff. So it was very helpful to have like a backstage folks, you know, guiding me along and pulling me through the muck. And these days, the publishing process, I mean, there's ghostwriters and there's all kinds of other ways to do it. So if writing is not your thing, there's certainly other options. But I think one of the keys, I mean, for me, it has to be something I'm passionate about. And then the ideas will start to flow. But if I'm trying to push too hard, it's probably not the right time to crank it out. So yeah. Anyway, that's my experience.
Tell me more about how your EA helped you, because, you know, that's something I'm particularly interested in, just because our business literally functions on EAs. And we actually started another business on top of that called Anywhere Talent, where we're providing global talent from all over the world, EAs that can help entrepreneurs power their businesses. So that was sounds like it was instrumental for you in helping your book really get off the ground and get going.
Yes. Well, so we self-published, and the publisher has a process, like a checklist with, you know, a long checklist. And I had gotten the book to maybe 80% just solo. So it was in a stage where we're starting to get to the, you know, the more frequent milestones, I guess, to get. And so what Becky's role was to make sure we're checking the boxes on that checklist. So she was kind of the intermediate between the publisher and me. And we would just put on the issues list, and, you know, she'd schedule time on my calendar for like, you need an hour for this to think about X, Y, Z, or to whiteboard this idea, I drew all the illustrations for the book, which was kind of fun. So those kind of things, she's just, you know, protecting my calendar as well as directing my calendar for the different steps of the publishing process with the deadlines in there and making sure that I'm staying on track. And again, it keeps me in the right, you know, unique ability sort of framework. If you know that strategic coach.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Right when you said that, I heard unique ability and I was thinking Dan Sullivan. Yeah.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, I'm a big, big fan of coach, and I've been in there for about 8 years, and it's been a great tool for me to think about my thinking. And so some of the book development kind of would show up in like some of the exercises they take us through, and just certainly the evolution of ProfitWorks. When I'm in strategic coach, I'm really not in there as an EOS implementer. I'm in there as a visionary at ProfitWorks. And so I have that hat on, and it's really helpful to put some excitement, put some creativity and problem solving into the framework. So,
yeah, no, I love that. You said one other thing that I want to touch on. You said a good EA protects and directs your calendar. I love that.
You say that?
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing is, I want to learn more about strategic coach. Selfishly, I'm starting, I think, in next month or maybe in August. I'm going to do my first
Oh,
one.
excellent.
I had never done strategic coach before. I've just tried to
Good.
devour the resources. But you said you've been doing it
Yeah.
for 8 years now.
I have, yes. And so there's three tiers. There's a signature program, which is kind of probably where you'll start, and it kind of helps you work on yourself and your time management, and it gives you sort of a glimpse into how you're going to build a self-managing company, which is the second tier. It's called 10X or 10 times. And 10 times doesn't mean if you're a $2 million company, you're going to be 20 million. It could, but it's more like 10X thinking is abundance thinking and going beyond like just trying to get a 10% growth every year kind of thing, which is not bad either, but it's more of a mindset that they're trying to teach in that second tier. And then that's the one I'm in and really enjoy that. And then the third one that you'll probably move into at some point is called Free Zone. And Free Zone is really interesting. So it's entrepreneurs sharing lots of ideas and creating new entities and new organizations. So, but they want you to kind of get the foundation first and then, get a self-managing company, which EOS certainly helps with that. Dan Sullivan, who's the founder, is he distinguishes sort of EOS from strategic coach. He says strategic coach is an operating system for your entrepreneurial brain, like for you, the individual. And EOS is an operating system for the business and the leadership team. So that's the way they really work well together, which is nice.
Yeah, that's a great way to understand it. So you've been doing that for 8 years. What are some other tools along the way that have really helped you? I know you talked about strategic coach, but yeah, what else has helped you in your entrepreneurial journey, just going through everything? Because you started multiple companies, written multiple books. Like, how do you handle it? How do you keep it all together?
Well, ha having a team that I'm okay delegating to, which is really important. Like we as entrepreneurs, I think so much I want to hang on to, I'm the only one that can do this, thinking. And I once I start to let go, and so some of the basic EOS tools I think have really helped me, like running EOS on me, especially from a time management standpoint, to know like what is my highest and best use, and like really doing some thinking about that. What do I love to do and what am I great at versus what am I able to do, but I don't like it. And so delegating those types of tasks have been like invaluable for me. And so in EOS, we have a tool called Delegate and Elevate. Strategic Coach has a similar tool. There's other tools, but it's a way for an entrepreneur to kind of start to think about highest and best use. So those tools, I think, are going to be one piece. Early in my journey as an EOS implementer, we had a group of implementers, and we had a WhatsApp group, and we were called the Honey Badgers. But it was like one of those things where you could be at a break during a session and say, "Hey, the client brought up this, not sure how to handle it, ideas." And then within like 30 seconds, you get two or three ideas, and they jump back. So it was really like a brain trust or a mind expanding group, which really helped me see other alternate sort of angles on things and to become a better coach. EOS itself has a very good system for teaching implementers how to teach the content, but facilitation is a different sort of art form. And so I've taken some classes on trying to become a better facilitator and always kind of on the path to mastery, just recognizing you never get there. And so I'm always learning and trying to surround myself with people that are teachers and also sponges as well. So, which a lot of this community, the US community is, which is nice. There's an author that's been really influential in my life named Steve Chandler, and he's written probably 50 books or something like that, but he coaches. And so his books are all directed toward a coach. It might be a life coach or any kind of coach, but certainly I'm a business coach, but his work, like one of his books called Crazy Good. He's got another one, and he cranks them out. The Power of Systems is a really cool book. It came out maybe 2 or 3 months ago. So those that kind of I'm always reading a couple books at the same time. How that works.
That's awesome. Yeah, and having a coach for the coaches, that's super important. That's something I actually talked to Jill about as well. And you guys are in the sessions, facilitating. It must get a little crazy at times just because you have a lot of hungry entrepreneurs or hungry leadership teams who want growth at all costs, and sometimes there may be disagreements over it. So I'm curious, how do you manage all the egos in the room, how do you manage the tenor and all the different voices that need to speak, but while also leading them towards where they want to get to?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it comes certainly with experience in terms of how to respond in certain situations. And I wouldn't say there's necessarily tons of ego, but there's sometimes fear early on in the journey and maybe one or two egos, and trying to help people gain a little bit more EQ, if you know, emotional intelligence, which is kind of like know thyself and be able to control thyself and then know others and coach others, sort of the four stages. So if I can help them become more self-aware as a team, like it's five people in the room, in how beneficial it's going to be for them to let down their guard and to sort of subordinate the ego to the greater good of the team. And that's creating an environment that's calm. You know, when people are talking over each other, say, hold on, one voice at a time. And Barry, we've heard a lot at it. Can you mind hold for a second? Let's hear the other four. What do you guys think about that? More voices, you know, so really holding the room and facilitating respectfully. So when the team sees how an EOS implementer can handle, I guess, a strong visionary that's like very, very big and loud and in the room, they love the facilitation because they don't get that back at the company. And so our role really is to, and we're not doing it to disrespect him, but we're trying to like help the team get stronger. And so sometimes we say, if I'm one-on-one with the entrepreneur, I'll say, try this leadership challenge. Can you speak last in the next session? You know, for in any, every issue we're talking about, just you go last. And he's like, yeah, I'll give a shot, you know? And so those kinds of things. That. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. So
it is a, it's fun. And every session brings sort of new twists, which I learn from. And I think it's important for me post session to take like 10 minutes and kind of debrief. We have a debrief sheet and just ask me questions about things that I observed during the meeting. And it helped me sort of course correct. If I could do that all over again, would I say something a little differently the next time or ask a different question or that kind of thing? So it is an adventure for sure.
Do you remember your first session ever?
I do. Yeah, I was in Colorado, and it was not sort of the standard start for an implementer.
How's that?
But it was kind of what I had. You might tell you the story briefly.
Yeah, I would love to hear about it. Yeah, yeah. Because I feel like being in that situation might be a little nerve wrecking, and I want to hear about how that was.
Oh my gosh! So I came out of boot camp in November of 2013, and I had pretty quickly somebody's like, okay, we want to start. And they said, we're going to Vail. We've got a Airbnb. And so just come out there and we're going to be there for two or three days. I can't remember. And so I was like, I think first day is supposed to be one day. It's called focus day, not 3 days. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, all right, well, I've got to follow the lead here. So Gino had said at bootcamp, he said, hey, when you get your first client, give me a call. We'll do 30 minutes on the phone and I'll just prepare you and make sure you got your head in the right space. So I get on with him and he goes, tell me about the client. I said, well, we're doing 2 days offsite. And he goes, that's not the process. And I said, I know, but this is like what I got. So he said, all right, it's going to be challenging, but here's some ideas. And there are videos and stuff that we as implementers can watch. So I was cramming videos and trying to figure out how to do this thing. And I went in and for 2 days, we had flip charts and we were in this house and playing pool and talking about marketing strategy and, talking about core values and kind of tried to cram everything in, which is not the way to do it. And, but they got left there with a VTO and left there with rocks. And I came back here and, we went to the quarterly session and 90 days later and they were cranking along. I think they saw the framework. And so it was valuable for them, but it was not ideal for me. And I was, like you said, I didn't know how they were going to respond or if they'd done any of this work before and were they going to, know that I'm an imposter and so forth. So it was a bit frightening, but once you get that at bat and then you're like, okay, I can kind of taste this now. I can see it. And then the second one's a little bit smoother and so forth. So it became more habit. And then I became much more convicted of the proven process, which is, focus day, vision building separated by, a month or so. And before they get into the quarterly. So it probably helped me get tuned into that.
Mm-hmm. And you touched on imposter syndrome. I feel like Not only that's something that coaches go through, entrepreneurs, everyone, whether you're working a job, how do you combat imposter syndrome?
That is a great question. So a couple of things I do. So I meditate daily. It's really important for me, which I think slows me down a little bit and gets me some perspective. If I ever get a note from somebody, like a card says, "Hey, thanks for this," or "You really helped me with that." Like when I was doing the boot camps for implementers, I'd get some nice gratitude and appreciation. Instead of just, tossing it, I have a folder that I put it into, I put date on it. And if I'm like down, like mentally, I pull that open and just read some of those, and I'm getting emotional now. But it's very important to know I'm having an impact. I'm helping people, and I'm helping entrepreneurs. I love working with entrepreneurs, and so it kind of builds my confidence back up a little bit. Certainly, getting a lot of sleep and watching alcohol intake and that kind of stuff super important from an energy standpoint. Because if I'm low on that, then I'm likely to go low with the imposter. So those are some pieces. I think having a coach, you mentioned, I mean, even if you look at any great athlete, they all have coaches. And so if you want to be a great coach, it's best to have somebody who's neutral, who can give you some perspective. So I always have a coaching relationship going on, and really enjoy that. And that takes discipline. It costs money, but I feel like it's an investment in myself. And I think that helps combat the potential imposter syndrome that could happen. So it's less frequent, but I think to your point, Amir, we all get it. We all have bad periods, so.
Yeah, for
But do
sure.
you have examples or things that you suggest as well? Because I'm open to it now.
Yeah, well, no, I love what you were saying about having that pieces of feedback with you, because when you read that, those affirmations, that positive feedback,
Yeah.
if you're in tough moments, especially, you're like rewiring your brain. And the brain, what they talk about more and more, there's a lot of neuroplasticity. You can kind of make it whatever you put into it. And so I love having that. I like to do an exercise where at the end of the night, I just write down five things that I was happy about that day, or that I'm grateful for. And even if it's like the crappiest day, after I'm done writing those five things, I'm like, wow, you know what? Today wasn't that bad. And like, I actually got a lot done and I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
It can kind of turn the entire day around. And especially when you do it right before you go to sleep, I think it helps me get to bed a little bit faster then too.
I think that's a great idea, great point. And it reminds me of why, like at the beginning of a quarterly in EOS, we asked them to share some good news in the last 90 days. And that the psychology behind that is because entrepreneurs, we get stuck in like all the stuff that's not going well. But if we can pause for a second and say, well, wait a second. Let's look backwards and say, look, this was great this quarter. We got this new client, we hired this person, and blah, blah, blah. The things aren't all so bad, and we can then, say, okay, what are the issues, and then march forward. So I love the idea of gratitude and reflection, and it's built into EOS as well, because we know teams can get down, even if they're growing, they can say, well, we're not growing as fast as we need to, but well, wait a second. Yeah, so it's nice to be able to slow down and do that. It does take, to your point, it does take discipline. You got to set it up as a habit.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like one of the other things I would add to is it all starts from the body. So I really try to make sure I'm always getting exercise in, because similar to meditation, which I'm a huge proponent of, when you're exercising vigorously, that can also put you in a flow state and slow the brain down and just get a lot of that negative energy out of your body. And by the end of
That's
it,
great.
anytime someone's done with exercise and you're like, I'm so glad I did that.
I did that. Yes, I agree with you 100%. That's great. Exercise and sleep. And sleep's kind of like my foundation. And then, energy's there, and then you could show up great at work and great in relationships, and 100%.
Yeah. I think there's this book. I think it's called Why Sleep Matters, or I think that's what it is.
Is it Matthew Walker?
Let me see. Matthew Walker.
Why
Oh,
We
yeah. Why We
Sleep.
Sleep. That's the one. Yeah. I haven't read it, but I've heard amazing things about it.
Highly recommend it. I've got it. I just looked over at my shelf. It's right over there. And I gave it to my brother, and because he has like this device, what are those, CPAP? I mean, all that kind of stuff. And so sleep is always just this elusive target. But the author, and he's got a master class in that app masterclass that's pretty cool, where he's doing these videos and talking about, you know, what's going on in the different stages of sleep, and pretty compelling. So
Yeah, I'm trying to read up more on sleep, and I've heard like especially that last hour of your sleep is so important because that's when you're getting some of the most REM.
oh, is that right? I didn't know that. Okay, so the piece that jumped out to me was one. He said, try to eat at least 3 hours prior to your last meal, your last bite of food, before, you know, closing your eyes, because then digestion is pretty much done, and you'll move into more quickly deep sleep. If you eat and then go to bed, I think you miss that whole stage. It just because your body has to digest, and then you go right into like REM and light sleep and so forth. So I thought that was really interesting. So I've moved up my eating time to 5:30, 6 p.m. You know.
It's tough, and I like to snack late at night. Like, not even bad stuff, but like fruits and whatnot. Like, I like to eat
You
that at night.
did.
But I totally get
Yeah.
what you're saying. I've read that before too, and now I'm really trying to cut it off at a certain
Yeah.
point so that I can just like easily go to sleep. And it's true. On the days where I have an earlier dinner, way easier to go to sleep, especially when I start like dimming down the lights and everything. I used to have the lights like on full blast, even like at 10 p.m. And now,
Oh,
like
yeah.
around like 8:39, I'm like, all right, let's start dimming it just a little bit.
Dial it down. That's cool. Yeah, I got these blackout curtains just installed recently, and that really helps. Just not have any light in the room. And I started wearing this mask, which I never had before. But
Oh, cool.
Peter Diamandis is another author who recommends that. And the mask's been pretty interesting, because there's obviously no light getting in, and you can travel with it and all that kind of stuff. So
What's the name of that mask, you know?
it is, and I can't remember. There's an $85 version, which I did not get, and then there's like a $32 version. So that's the one I tried. So
Okay.
it's like a But if you type
Manta?
in sleep mask, what's it called?
Is it called Manta? Manta sleep mask?
Yes. Yeah, that is
Okay.
it. And it's like got colors on it, or some of them do.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's cool.
On to sleep mask.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I'm always trying to hack sleep. So.
Yeah, that's right. They say, like, if you're getting, it's like 6 to 8. Like, there's no shortcuts. I thought that's really interesting.
Yeah, you can't cheat.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to end with a couple of rapid fire questions if you're cool with that.
Sure, yeah, I'll
Okay.
try.
Favorite book?
Atlas Shrugged.
Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand. Okay.
Ayn Rand, A-Y-N, Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged. So I've read it maybe 4 or 5 times. Huge tome, right?
Yeah.
But
Thick book, yeah.
short little thing. The metaphor is the entrepreneur is Atlas, and we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders. And her point in this fictional story is, if we just gave up and shrugged, the world would collapse, because entrepreneurs would make the world go round. So love that book.
That's awesome. I think that's Mark Cuban had an interview one time where he said that was one of his favorites as well of all time.
Oh, is that right? It's cool. Good. It's a big commitment.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Favorite city? You've I'm sure you travel to a lot of cities for implementation, but which one is your favorite?
First one that came to mind was Chicago, and then Boulder came in right after that. So, but I lived there right after college. It was recession. It was like 91. Trouble finding a job, but what a fun. See, I was in Lincoln Park, and I mean, the restaurant scene, the bars, the people, it's just so much fun. It's a beautiful city around that lake. So that, I guess that's first one.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then your favorite movie of all time. This is a tough one.
Oh my gosh. So Diner came to mind. And
Diner?
have you Diner?
I have not
Yeah, it's
seen
like
that.
Mickey Rourke. It's an older movie. But these buddies who go to this diner and hang out, and they're, I think it's post college, and they're just screwing around, and lots of little stories and funny little stories in there. I'm trying to think of all the actors in there, but it's stuff, people that are 70s, you know, 60s, 70s now, but really funny back then. It might have been, I don't know what year. Can you look it up? But
I'm
it's
looking at it
probably
right now. Yeah, so I
like,
see Kevin Bacon, Mickey Rourke, Steve Gutenberg, Paul
oh
Reiser,
yeah,
Tim
there you
Daly,
go.
Stern. Yeah.
That's pretty funny, actually. And anything by Quentin Tarantino, when you mentioned Tim Daly. Yeah, Reservoir Dogs. I saw friend of mine somehow got the copy of Pulp Fiction before the movie came out, and I read it. I was like, oh my, this is unbelievable. And
No
so,
way.
yeah, I was read it on paper, like, I don't know, a year before the movie came out, or some number of months. But he's what a genius director he is.
So you actually read it? You read the script before the movie even came out, and you're
I
like,
read
"Oh,
the
this
script,
is."
yeah. I think because I had a buddy in LA, and then he must have known somebody, or gotten, I don't know how he got a hold of it, but I remember reading it. I was in my I was living at home at that time, but that's been the summer in the 90s sometime, but I don't remember what came out. But
Yeah, I think it was 94, maybe. I'm not sure.
was it? Okay.
Man, yeah, that's a great movie. Quentin Tarantino is incredible. Like, you watch his movies and he's totally doing it different than everyone else. Like, he has that foundation and structure, but he still breaks all the rules somehow.
They're an interesting little thing, and I haven't done all the research on it, but you know when John Travolta and they're driving in the car and he's talking about the Burger Royale and he went to Paris and all this. That story shows up in another Quentin Tarantino movie, and I can't remember where the lines, but he has characters that play in different movies, which I don't know how he does that, but it's pretty cool. Ties it all together.
Yeah, it's the small things like that that like people appreciate, you know?
Yes, yeah, that's true.
Well, Alex, thanks so much for joining today. Really have fun, you know, talking about everything. You know, we talked about LA, we talked about for movies, book writing. I think that's incredible that you've written like three different books. That's really
Thank
awesome.
you. I appreciate that, Amir. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's great
Yeah.
to be here.
And before we sign off, like, is there anything else that you want to be able to add where people can find you? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, definitely on LinkedIn. And then alexfreitag.com is part of a starting point where it can go into the EOS world or into the ProfitWorks world. And the books are on Amazon and Audible. Love recording the Audibles. That's a lot of fun to get in the studio and just like, get all focused on that. So, but those are probably the best places. And ProfitWorksLLC.com is our website. It has, if you're going to DIY an incentive plan, or you want help, or you want us to do it, there's lots of choices there. But appreciate that, and I wish all of your listeners success with their journey and this entrepreneurial journey, and have fun with it. Make sure you're with the right people. So,
Yeah.
thank you, Amir.
Have fun. The journey is the best part, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's right.
All right. Thanks so much, Alex.